My name's Murphy. We're here at 97.9 The Wren, and we are talking to award-winning artist Julie Collins. Glad to have you on with us this morning.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, and we're really looking forward to August 31st when you'll be performing at Orkney Springs, Virginia, at the Shenandoah Valley Music Festival. Think that it's going to be a great time. I'll be out there. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Thank you.
Good. So, do you remember the first time you ever got on a stage and performed in front of an audience?
When I was about 4 years old, and my father was on tour. I was still the only child. I was three, I guess. And we were in Butte, Montana. He was on tour doing concerts. And he said, "Do you want to go on stage?" And I said, "Oh, well, that would be fun." I said, "What'll I do? What'll I sing?" And he said, "Well, it's good to sing a song you know."
Right, exactly.
Which is always good advice.
Yes.
And so I sang "I'll Be Home for Christmas." And it was a great success. It was also April.
Right.
That's how it all started.
Oh, boy. That got you a love for the stage, did it?
Well, I was enchanted with the stage. My father was a performer, so I was exposed to all of that, all of what that means. The concerts, tours, the radio shows, the fundraisers, the shows for all of the big clubs, the Lions Club, everybody in Denver. I was born in Seattle, so it all started in Seattle, and I was also exposed to everybody singing. My godfather was a great singer who actually had a Carnegie Hall debut, and the guys always sang, my father and his fraternity brothers, and the music was all around me.
Oh, you're surrounded by it, yeah.
Yeah.
So you started early. Did you sing a lot with your father on stage? Or
I sang sometimes on the radio show. I sang in school shows. I sang in the church choir, in the school choir, my teacher's choruses, master classes. I started studying the piano when I was five. So, you know, I had a constant series of lessons and structure and playing in various situations, singing. The first musical that I was in was Snow White, and I was 11 years old, and I sang "Someday My Prince Will Come."
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's that love of stage went into musicals as well, I guess, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know that as your career went on, you did "Send in the Clowns." Is that from your love of musicals that brought you to that song?
No, it's because I fell in love with the song.
It is a phenomenal song.
I heard it, and I didn't know anything about Sondheim when I heard that song. As a matter of fact, I didn't know anything about Little Night Music. I was completely in the dark. I was busy recording Amazing Grace and Both Sides Now and Who Knows Where the Time Goes and Someday
Right.
Soon. And, you know, I had already had a huge career and had pretty much put my mark on what would then be called popular American music, radio and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was touring from the age of 19.
I was 19. Oh, my goodness. Started
young.
So
I've been doing this for 60 years, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And
boy.
I'm beginning to get the hang of it.
Uh-huh. You think you got it now?
Well, I'm beginning to get the hang of it.
Right.
I don't think you're ever finished when you're learning.
Right, right. And you're still doing a lot of shows every year. How many dates do you do a year now?
About 120.
Oh, okay. So staying really busy.
That's right.
Yeah, still recording as well, I understand.
I have a new album coming out in November called Winter Stories, which is with the Chatham County Line, a wonderful group. Some of them live in Raleigh, and one of them lives in Colorado. We've had a wonderful time making that album, which will have great things on it. And then I'm doing a new album of my own material, which I'll be recording in a few weeks, which will come out in early 2020.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, you're just keeping busy, aren't you?
Have to.
Right, right, right. Well, and especially when you do what you love to do. You're right, exactly. So where you've sold about 55 million albums? That's not bad.
I've sold a lot of albums, so
yeah.
That's very good to know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. Well, I was also just curious about, I know that throughout your career, you've been really heavy in social activism.
Hand in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. And I recently heard the song Dreamer. I really love that one.
Oh, good. I'm glad you do.
Yeah.
I like it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an important song. What brought you to that particular song?
You know, I was watching an interview with a young woman who was a dreamer and who was talking about her mother being concerned and worried that she was going to get deported. And it all happened, and suddenly it was a song. That's the way it happens sometimes. You don't really know. I didn't know what it was for a couple of years. It was just sitting around my my various and sundry notes, and then suddenly, about a year and a half ago, it became a song, and I recorded it. And it is amazing how strongly audiences react to this song, because fundamentally they would like to do something
right
about the situation that's going on, and we don't really always know what to do. And
right.
I think part of it is that we have to get motivated. Getting motivated to be of service is always a question of what you do and how you do it, when, where. But in those moments after they hear that song in a concert, you can hear their minds turning over. What is my part in this?
Yeah, you can actually move people to do things, perhaps. Or at least give them a new thought process.
The thinking is the thing.
Yes.
The
mm-hmm.
thought is the thing.
Yes.
Sitting alone, that's one of the things that is so exciting and so interesting and forever changing about being a performer of live shows. There's always that moment, you know, you're sitting in the dark, you're listening to a performer, obviously, you're listening to somebody who has something to say. I'm not thinking about junk music particularly, but thinking about things that are thought-provoking, and you're sitting there by yourself, and you can't turn and talk to your friends because it would be rude and disruptive, and you have to turn off your phone. So really you're sitting there with your own conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're being let alone for a while. You're listening.
Right.
And one of the things we don't do very much in this world is listen. We listen to a lot of chatter and a lot of BS on the television, but we're not accustomed to. That's why I love radio, frankly, because it allows time to think.
Right.
And there you are in the dark by yourself in an audience, and you're actually dreaming and thinking, and a lot of things are coming to your mind. So you have the privacy of things coming to you that might not arrive otherwise.
Right. Is that what kind of drew you to folk music in the beginning?
I love the stories. I always loved the stories. So when I was 16, I first started singing what we call folk music, and I was hooked from the start.
Yeah. It says a little bit more than just some of the pop music that was on the radio at the time.
Well, the stories, you know, I grew up with Moon, June, Spoon, all the Rodgers and Hart. My father sang them to make a living. I knew all those songs. Mm-hmm. But there was something so spectacularly different about personal stories and about the kind of perspective. Also, you're sitting there with a guitar alone in a room instead of having to have a full orchestra
right.
and a conductor and 55 musicians and a recording studio. So it's different, and it's very powerful. One person, and it happened so suddenly. Well, it seemingly did. I mean the popularity of it, because pre-1957, or I suppose, actually, the Weavers had a hit with Irene, with Goodnight Irene in 1950, and then they had On Top of Old Smokey in 1951. So they were actually kind of changing the perspective of what was allowed on radio
mm-hmm.
already.
Yeah.
And then by the time I started picking up a guitar, 55, pretty soon the Kingston Trio was out there, Harry Belafonte was out there. It was slow but sure, but the real change was quite apparently quite sudden, because suddenly it was okay to be out there with a guitar singing a song without 500 people in the choir and,
right.
and a huge orchestra and an enormously expensive production.
Right, right. Much simpler, much more stripped down, which fit the lyric as well. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Well, speaking of songs that you've written, can you tell us a little bit about a couple songs? How about Holly Ann and Born to the Breed?
Oh, the song Holly Ann about my sister being a weaver,
mm-hmm.
I wrote probably in 1971, maybe 70. I had started writing songs in 1967. The first song that I wrote was called Since You've Asked, and since then I've been writing ever since. I'm doing some brand new songs for this new album of my own compositions, which will come out in 2020. It's called Beauty and Resistance, and includes, of course, another version of the Dreamer song.
Oh, okay.
But I've been steadily writing, and yes, I wrote about my sister. The other one you mentioned was, what was it?
Born to Breed.
Born to the Breed.
Yeah, Born to the Breed.
And Born to the Breed, I wrote about my son who was had gone off on his own to be in a rock and roll band. And then, of course, progressively, I've written about situations. I wrote about the children who were at risk of landmines in the former Yugoslavia. I've written about 9/11. I've written about the Walls, which is a song that I wrote after my husband, Lewis Nelson, designed the Korean War Memorial on the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Oh,
and so songs about certain situations have also occurred, but just songs about life in general. Well, The Blizzard may be a song of mine that is well known to my personal audiences, although the recording of it was never really out there. It was made in 1989, but I've recorded it again for my new album with the Chatham County Line. The Blizzard, when people hear it, they don't necessarily know it, but when I finish it, they all scream and clap and stand up and act as though they know it.
Well, that's great, isn't it? Yeah. They know it by the time it gets to the end, huh?
By the time it gets to the end, they know it very well.
Great. Well, great. That must be a great feeling then.
It is a great feeling. And, of course, I've always written in these past 50 years. Since Leonard Cohen asked me in 1967, after I'd recorded Suzanne, he asked me why I wasn't writing my own songs. And so I said, I don't know. And then I started writing my own songs.
It didn't occur to you before then, huh?
No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you started writing your own songs. You've written some great ones over the years. So.
Thank you. I love the process of being able to sit down and work and find something that amounts to a song.
Has it ever come, does it come easier now, or is it about the same as it's always been?
You know, the first song that I wrote, Since You've Asked, I sat down after Leonard asked me that question, and I sat down in my studio, and I wrote Since You've Asked, and it took me about 30 minutes.
Oh, boy.
And, of course, that's the way they get you, because the next song took about 5 years.
Right, exactly.
But it's anywhere between 40 minutes and 5 years. Sometimes you just go, Dreamers was a good indication. I wrote it in 2016,
mm-hmm.
and it hung around in my notebook. I was trying to figure out what to do with it and how to work it, and then I started singing it in last year in 2018. So there are things that have hung around in my notebook for years. I just finished writing a song called Girl from Colorado, and I must have started that 5 years ago or something. So they sit there and they emerge and they take shape, and then you suddenly think of something you might do with them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to write a song right now about gun control, and it's very, very slow.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Like everything about gun control.
yeah, unfortunately, right.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of artists say that when they go to, sometimes when they sit down to write a song, it's almost like that somebody's whispering in their ear, and it just comes out. And other,
oh, yes,
other,
absolutely.
Yeah. And
yeah.
So you found that to be true sometimes with some of your songs?
Oh, yes. And you don't know when it's going to come, where it's going to come. Last night, I write a lot of poetry, and that's really the key to keep writing. And I had pulled out a few of these things that I'd written, poems mainly, that maybe they'll turn into a song, maybe not. And last night I was sitting around, and there's something I wrote a few years ago. And it suddenly I got the chorus. Hmm. I don't know where it came from. You know, I would say maybe Leonard Cohen's muse was busy.
Right,
or maybe
right.
She wasn't busy and had time to drop by.
Right, exactly, yeah. It's amazing when they just pop out of nowhere. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right. All right, well, I think that we are getting close to the end. But I do have one more question I want to ask you about, and you may have been asked this a few times before. Tell us a little bit about Stephen Stills and Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Oh, that's a good story. You know, I just did in the last year and a half, Stephen Stills and I were on the road. We did 115 shows together and made an album together called Everybody Knows, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is a big song of Leonard Cohen's.
Oh, okay.
That we should be singing again. I sang it a lot on the tour with him, but I haven't sung it very much lately. So we met when I was making a record for Elektra in 1968, and it was a big change in my personnel. My band was suddenly turned over, and I had some new people in it, including Van Dyke Parks and the guys who play on all the country songs, Buddy Emmons and James Burton, and Stephen Stills walked in, and he started playing, and then we had this big affair, and he wrote Sweet Judy Blue Eyes for me, which was very nice of him, very nice.
Cool song to be written for you, right?
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we've remained friends all these years, so that's why it was possible to go out and do a concert tour and have a ball. We just had a most wonderful time.
Oh, that's great, yeah. And what were you doing on tour as far as song-wise? You're just doing a combination of
We did a number of both our songs, mm-hmm. songs that he'd written, songs that I'd written. we did a couple of other writers, and we did one of my new songs called River of Gold. So that was exciting to get Stephen Stills to sing one of my songs.
Right.
That was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, he's
funny.
All right, great. Well, I really appreciate that, and it's been great talking to you today.
A pleasure. Take care. Have a great day. Hi, this is Judy Collins on The Wren. Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to 979 The Wren.
All right, great. Well, I really appreciate that, and it's been great talking to you today. And
a pleasure. Take care. Have a great day.